Imagine waking up tomorrow in a world where your value isn't determined by your productivity, where technology serves humanity rather than shareholders, where automation is celebrated, not feared. This isn't utopian fantasy, but the provocative vision at the heart of Inventing the Future. The book challenges a fundamental paradox. Despite unprecedented technological advancement, we're working longer hours than our grandparents. Why? Because we've surrendered the future to neoliberal forces while the left has retreated into what the authors call folk politics, small-scale, local, and immediate actions that fail to address systemic problems. This crisis of imagination has left us trapped in a present where alternatives to capitalism seem impossible. But what if we could reclaim the future? Why do massive protests yield minimal change? The answer lies in folk politics, tactical assumptions that privilege the immediate, authentic, and local over the strategic, mediated, and global. This manifests through temporal immediacy, spontaneous reaction over strategy, spatial immediacy, fetishizing the local while rejecting scalable solutions, and conceptual immediacy, prioritizing concrete action over abstract thinking. The problem isn't that local action is wrong, all politics must begin somewhere concrete, but that movements remain trapped at this level, unable to address complex systems. At the 2001 Summit of the Americas, protesters who breached security fences stood uncertain, having no script for what came next. This pattern repeats across movements that mobilize impressive numbers but lack strategic vision beyond protest. Folk politics emerged as a response to global complexity and the collapse of traditional left frameworks. Yet, in attempting to reduce complexity to human scale, it surrenders the terrain of systemic change. Protests become ritualistic performances rather than strategic interventions, and movements avoid specific demands for fear of division. The left has become defensive rather than visionary, trapped in what Mark Fisher called capitalist realism, the pervasive sense that no alternative is possible. While the left retreated to localism, neoliberalism executed the opposite strategy, patiently building a counter-hegemonic project that transformed political common sense over decades. What's remarkable is that neoliberalism began as a fringe theory whose adherents were mocked by mainstream economists. How did this marginal ideology become so dominant that alternatives now seem unthinkable? The answer lies in strategic vision and organizational discipline. Beginning with the 1947 founding of the Mont Pelerin Society, neoliberals focused on changing political common sense through a long-term strategy, filtering ideas through think tanks, universities, and policy documents. They recognized that transforming society required a full-spectrum approach across multiple institutions and sectors. Some think tanks tackled philosophical foundations, while others developed specific policy proposals. Organizations targeted what Hayek called second-hand dealers in ideas, journalists, academics, and teachers who shape national thought. Most crucially, neoliberals worked with strategic patience spanning generations. When stagflation hit in the 1970s, rendering traditional Keynesian solutions ineffective, neoliberal ideas were lying around, ready to be implemented. Their think tanks had prepared detailed policy proposals covering everything from monetary policy to labor law reform. After 1979, with Thatcher's election in Britain and Volcker's appointment to the Federal Reserve, neoliberalism rapidly became hegemonic, transforming not just policy, but subjectivity itself. What would a compelling alternative look like? The authors propose four interconnected demands that could form the foundation of a post-work society. First, embrace full automation, not as a threat, but as liberation from drudgery. Without automation, post-capitalist futures must choose between abundance without freedom, echoing Soviet work centricity, or freedom without abundance, represented by primitivist dystopias. This isn't about eliminating all work, but reducing necessary labor to its minimum. Second, reduce the working week without pay cuts. Workers have historically resisted fixed working hours, and many early labor movement successes centered on reducing work time. A shorter working week redistributes available work, yields environmental advantages through reduced energy consumption, improves mental health, and consolidates class power by withdrawing labor hours from the market. Third, implement universal basic income, giving every citizen livable money without means testing. Beyond reducing poverty, UBI's significance lies in transforming power relations between labor and capital. By providing subsistence without job dependency, it makes work truly voluntary, unbinding the coercive aspects of wage labor. Fourth, undertake a cultural shift in understanding work. The greatest obstacles to implementing UBI aren't economic but cultural, particularly overcoming the deeply ingrained work ethic. What's needed is a counter-hegemonic approach that challenges work's necessity and desirability, leveraging the widespread disengagement most people feel toward their jobs. Achieving a post-work society requires transforming society from the ground up, recognizing that meaningful change operates on multiple levels simultaneously. Hegemony functions through both ideological and material forces. Economic infrastructures like just-in-time supply chains are not just economically efficient, but politically effective at breaking union power by dispersing workers and making strikes less effective. Education forms a key institution for transforming intellectual hegemony, particularly in how economic possibilities are imagined. Projects should focus on pluralizing economics teaching and expanding popular economic literacy through accessible media. The left must overcome its historical aversion to formal modeling to develop rigorous alternatives addressing contemporary phenomena like platform capitalism and automation. Technology must be repurposed for social ends rather than profit maximization. The Lucas Plan of 1976 exemplifies this approach. When aerospace workers faced layoffs, they developed a comprehensive plan with 150 socially useful product proposals, repurposing military production toward medical technologies and renewable energy. Similarly, Chile's CyberSyn project created a proto-internet using telex machines to enable democratic economic planning. Contemporary technologies like logistics networks, while currently exploitative, could serve post-capitalist ends by enabling flexible production and distribution. The path forward requires actively reclaiming modernity's promise and challenging neoliberal common sense through counter-hegemonic projects. This means building a new collective we through populism, not as mindless revolt, but as a political logic uniting different identities against a common opponent. This includes precarious workers, the unemployed, students burdened with debt, and displaced industrial workers. A successful political movement requires diverse organizations performing essential tasks. Awareness raising through grassroots education, legal support networks defending activists, media work shaping public narratives, detailed policy proposals offering concrete alternatives, and leadership development sustaining momentum. This means a pluralism of forces with a common vision, not just loose alliances. We stand at a crossroads between surrendering to technological feudalism or embracing technology's liberatory potential. The choice isn't between conservative austerity and anti-modernist retreat, but between these limited options and a politics celebrating liberation, abundance, and expanded freedom. By demanding full automation, reduced working hours, universal basic income, and a cultural shift away from work centrism, we can begin building a world where technology serves human flourishing rather than capital accumulation. The future remains unwritten, but only if we're bold enough to imagine it differently and patient enough to build the infrastructure needed to make that imagination reality.